and gentlemen, please give a warm Detroit Economic Club welcome to George, George, and Jackie.
Well, thank you, Florine. That was magnificent. Florine Mark, ladies and gentlemen, I mean, she's honestly a legend. On behalf of WWJ and the Detroit Economic Club, I would like to welcome you all to today's luncheon. Thank you for joining us today. This is a very exciting time in Detroit. It's a very exciting time in our nation. We are starting to see business grow. We are seeing it right here in Detroit. As I said in 2008 to my husband when we were driving in the car, as Detroit goes, so goes the nation. They may not know it yet, but we are the leaders of this great country. And I'm very, very proud to be sitting here this afternoon with these two very fine gentlemen. Florine already did the introductions. I would like to thank you both for sitting down with me today. I prepared some questions, but also, as Steve Gregorian had already said, you are also part of this discussion, and we want to hear from you. So Florine will ask those questions a little bit later, but right now they're going to get grilled by me. And of course, I'm kidding. First of all, thank you both for sitting here this afternoon. And before we get into the nitty-gritty of it all, personally, on a personal level, being here in front of this audience and seeing the renaissance in the city of Detroit, how does that make you two gentlemen feel?
Well, I've been from Detroit my whole life, as a matter of fact. I grew up in the city, and to me, it's just incredible to see what's going on. So proud to be able to go around the country and have people ask me, gee, there's a lot going on in Detroit, and to finally be able to say that's it really is special what's happening here. So for me, it's very personal.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I'm not initially from Detroit. I'm initially from Ohio, and coming here in 04, you know, there were a few good years, and then we went into the global recession. And you know, we're around the corner on the 77 Woodward is our building. You sit up on the 10th floor, Jack, and you look down over Campus Martius. And I can remember 08, 09, and 10 looking down and how sparse this city was, right? It was amazing to me, the lack of individuals. Fast forward, 2016, 17, 18, companies like Quicken, Chrysler, others coming downtown, the vibrancy with that and the energy. In fact, I was down here with some friends this weekend at Prime and Proper. If you haven't been there, it's a plug for it. It's a wonderful restaurant. But just the vibe at night. You know, it's 11 o'clock at night and the streets are filled. It's something we should all be extremely proud of. And as you said, as Detroit goes, I agree with you. I think the country goes.
All right. Well, navigating the gig economy, that's obviously the topic today. Gig meaning not on your computer, but landing a gig, a job. It used to be a bar job, right? A singing gig, something like that. My husband used to do that. So now we're talking about gigs. Millennials are changing the landscapes. Also, very smart older people are changing the landscape of a niche job that is the perfect person for the perfect position. So I will ask you first, George Corona. Obviously, this new gig economy has really changed the landscape of a corporation like Kelly Services. How has Kelly Services adapted?
Well, you know, for a company like Kelly, we adapt because our customers demand that we adapt. And we have two sets of customers at Kelly. We have our own bill-paying customers, but we also have our employees who are customers of ours as we try to bring talent to our own clients. And when we look at how they want to work, what's happening is there's this big change in the global workforce where people are saying we want more flexibility, we want more work-life balance, we don't want to be tied to a certain location, we want to work from home. And you have companies on the other side who have to adapt to the fact that talent wants to work in a different way. And so we've always been a company that's innovative, but we innovate because our customers ask us to innovate. And so as we have seen these changes in the workforce coming, we've been working with companies to get them and to consult with them to understand that they have to look at things differently, they have to treat people differently, and they have to be much more open than the traditional come to work at 9, go home at 5, and come into the office. And we at Kelly are leading the way with having companies learn how to do that, and also taking care of our employees by doing that.
George?
Yeah, I think that, you know, at Ernst & Young, we sell people, right? That's what we provide to a lot of the companies that are out here in this audience today. And when you think about that, we always want to have the best and the brightest. And when you look at the disruptions, whether it's societal or it's technological, like AI or robotics, which we talked about with the students prior, that disruption, we have to adapt, right? And we pride ourselves at always bringing the best solutions to our clients, which means we have to have the best talent. And what we were seeing is this change out there and this change in the economy with really more work-life integration, more flexibility being required. And we wanted to adapt, and we wanted to be, again, innovative and ahead of the curve, really for a couple of reasons. One, for our company, we thought it was the right thing to do for EY. Two, for our employees, we think it's the right thing to do for them, to empower them and to give them more freedom. More importantly, from a standpoint of our clients, right? Our clients want the right people at the right time for the right gig, as we would call it. And we found that that has to be augmented by the gig economy and really by freelance employees. So we've embraced it. We've been on a journey with our platform for the last year. And we've got 12,000 contractors on that, and we're looking forward to continuing that build.
So you've got hundreds of employers looking for thousands of candidates.
Yeah.
How do they find you? How do the candidates find you, and how do you find the candidates?
So for our standpoint, you know, we have a recruiting channel that hasn't changed traditionally. Our talent agenda is really made up of four things. We have our full-time employees, which we will always have. We have agencies that we use employees from as well. We're looking at robotics and automation as a third tier, and then the last is contingent. So whether it's our own GigNow platform, whether it is going through the agencies, or whether it's job boards, etc., that's how we post. And I think some of it is, over time, the branding of the process. The branding of GigNow is internal to EY. There's other platforms like Upwork, etc., that are much more global in nature and serve everyone. But for us, the need is going to come from our individuals of saying, this is what we foresee a solution being in the future. These are the skills in which are going to be required to serve that. Then we go out to the marketplace. And again, we do it through our traditional colleges, experience hires, our messaging boards, and then now our new platform, GigNow.
LinkedIn? Is that something that's helpful?
Yeah, that's the social media boards, okay. I would say.
And Kelly Services, I know a lot of people can go to your website if they're looking for a particular job and they can fill out an application, but some of these are real niche-y, and someone that you're looking for the perfect job might be a little, may think that they're overqualified to go to fill out an application. So how does that person get in touch with the company?
Well, first of all, what we try to do is we continually have outreach into the specialties that we think we're the best at providing. And what we try to do is we build candidate communities of people who have an affinity to work for Kelly, because we're putting them into the types of jobs that they're good at, and we're putting them into the world's best companies. And you know, we serve 95 of the Fortune 500 at Kelly, and so we have the best jobs available for them. So by us building that affinity in the Canada community, most of what we get comes from word of mouth. So our employees that work for us, we treat them well, we give them access to good jobs. They're the ones that come to us and bring us the talent. So I would tell you that if you're really looking to come to Kelly, you can use multiple channels like our website and those kinds of things, but most importantly, it's the networking that you do with all of your peers.
How do you think this started, and in what years do you think that people started deciding? Was it working mothers? Was it the recession? Was it younger families? What was it where people decided, you know, I don't want to do the 9-to-5 thing anymore. I want to work part-time. It's different than flex time, though. It's without the benefits. So can you explain that a little bit about which came first?
Chicken or the egg?
Yes.
You know, I think gigs, as you mentioned earlier, I think when I talked to, I was giving a speech earlier this month, and I was talking to my wife about it, and she said, well, didn't we all just do gigs, you know, playing in a band, it's a gig. So the gig economy has been around forever, right? It's just short-term freelance labor. What's brought it into the spotlight? I think there's three things, in my opinion. I think one is technology. I think definitely having the virtual workplace, things like Skype, where before you had to be around the table, now you can be anywhere in the world, and it's somewhat seamlessly occurring for work. I think number two is people want work-life integration more than ever, and George talked about that earlier. That is a requirement to come work someplace. Well, now, the third part of it is this reduction of barriers. So things like ACA, now it's bringing people into the workforce that may have been hesitant. I need my health care, right? Well, companies aren't really offering pensions anymore. You can get health care on an open market. So starting your own gig and being a self-employed, I think, has become easier than ever, quite frankly. And I think just more people are encouraged and want to jump in. The Great Recession, as we talked about earlier, I think what that did is people lost their jobs, so they were forced into the gig economy. So where you had earlier a choice, a lot of us in the room didn't have a choice. We may have lost our full-time job, so we had to do something. So we took up part-time, as you would call it, or a gig. And what we found out is probably two things. One, it gives us the work-life integration that we want, and we can make a lot of money doing it. And the other thing that they found out is, I think a survey was done, and it said by Upwork again, 71% of people that are in the gig economy have gotten more work this year than they did last year. So the demand side of the gig economy, as well as that reception by those people, has just been very well received, and hence why that is more in the mainstream today and not on the fringes.
And Kelly Services actually did a study of its own that said that people who are using the gigs, that those companies are more innovative than the others.
Yeah. We just came out with a study, and the first thing that we found was, and this isn't well known, 70% of the people who are working in the gig economy do it by choice. It's not because they have to. They do it because they choose to work in that fashion, that they want that flexibility to be able to work in that way. But the companies that are best at using them, what happens is they're bringing in a diverse array of talent into their company with different ideas, and they are becoming much more innovative because of the collaboration that they get from bringing these people in from all different walks of life and using them to further their business.
So could either of you explain what a gig looks like in the corporate world today? For example, some recent hires.
I can give you an example that in one of our business units, we were questioning our business model. And we were wondering, we were able to stress test whether that business model was working. Was it the best? Was it working in the marketplace? And when you try to do that for people that are within your company, we've all been there for 24 years, so you get pretty insular and you see things the same way. We went outside. We actually used one of the platforms that are out there, the technology platforms, to find a consultant, a high-level consultant who had a background in his past from McKinsey, to come in and spend about 3 months with us learning about the business, learning about the marketplace, and stress testing whether or not our business model was right for the time. And so a lot of times when people think about gig, they think about Uber, but again, more than 60% of the people that are working in this fashion are high-level credentialed individuals. So that's just one example of how we used it.
Yeah, I probably a similar example. You know, technology in the consulting space, which is where I sit, it used to have a time frame where it would be kind of 5 to 10 years where you would kind of flush through like an SAP system. Today's technology, it goes through our cycle usually in about 6 to 12 months. So similar to that culture, we're going to look for people, and the question is do we really want to own those individuals or do we want to rent? Because that technology is changing so fast. So we may have a project where we want to start with a new technology, but it's unproven, unsure. So we would rather reach to the gig economy, use a contractor for that, before we decide that we're going to build that practice. Another example would just be, depending upon the place in the world that we need to deliver a supply chain project. We may not have a resource within EY, but through the gig, there may be somebody over there that we can actually hire, get into our cultural fit with EY, and put on our team.
So how has this affected corporate's bottom line? Obviously, you have to adapt to the gig economy, but in terms of our companies not wanting to spend money on healthcare for individuals, so this is actually a cheaper way for them to hire, or is this something that you're going to have, that you need to invest in?
Yeah, what we found is, I think, when you look at why companies are doing it, down the list is cost savings. Really what they're looking for is they are trying to further their business plans. And the only way to do that is with talent. and you have to be able to adapt to the way that the talent that you need wants to work. I do think that, as George said, with the advent of things like the Affordable Health Care Act, it has allowed people to go out and work more flexibly because they have access to the kind of benefits that they need. But for a company, it's an imperative for them to be able to meet the needs with the talent that they need to get there. And if somebody doesn't want to work full-time and doesn't want to come to the office 9 to 5, but they have the skills that you need, you have to be flexible enough to find a way to work with them.
Yeah, I would agree. I think you're right. Is cost part of it? That's when someone asked you, you know, was salary the decision why you left? And they would say, well, no, salary wasn't. I said, well, it probably wasn't number one, but it was probably one of the top two. So cost is always there, but I think there's a lot of reasons in which companies choose to be in the gig economy. I think it's flexibility as much as it is anything, and for us, it's this new skill set. It's when we look at it, we still have our traditional route. So when we say there's a cost savings, it's not between the hiring of a full-time or hiring somebody from the gig. We're continuing to hire the full-time. We're augmenting with the gig economy. But it's more on the demand side. Right? We're seeing the demand when we go out to find institutions like Wayne State that we've talked a lot about here today. Those, you know, future employees of the firm, they're asking us to be part of the gig. So this isn't something in which Ernst & Young is going out and saying, okay, the gig economy is the future. We're hearing that from all of you. So we have to be able to switch and augment our talent agenda appropriately. Now, is there a cost savings? There can be cost savings depending. For us, it's a cycle time cost savings, Jackie. So again, our traditional models, when we find we need a contracted employee, we're taking us, you know, 4 to 6 weeks. With our platform now, we can get it done in a week. So that ability to have somebody on the ground serving our employees is more important than ever. And to be able to do that quicker, you can call it generating quicker revenue, but we would say it also saved us a lot of time and effort.
The right person is more productive. So if the right person works in a flexible way, you're going to be more productive by putting that person to work.
All right, well, let's talk about the whole millennial sort of perception. I don't want to offend anybody that's in this room today. But there is the perception that millennials, they want to choose their hours because they need to, you know, they have a trip that they've got to go to, they've got to make it to the craft beer place. You know, I mean, there are perceptions. There are. But they will not, certain people, this has nothing to do with their talent. Is the business world adapting? It used to be you got to be at your job 15 minutes early, you got to leave your job 45 minutes late, you need to work your lunch to get the boss to notice you. Is that perception changing to adapt to the millennials and the way that they are sort of living their lives now?
First, I'll start by saying I love millennials.
Yes, I do too.
75 to 80% of my company is made up of millennials. So the average age at EY is 27 years old. So the majority of our people are millennials. Are we adapting? Yeah, of course we're adapting. Is it because of millennials? No. Is it because, again, there's a lot of different disruptions out there that are causing us to change? By all means. And the war for talent, it's harder than ever, right? To get the right resource to want to come work for your company, whether it's full-time or as a freelance employee. Because, again, we have to remember, not only are we trying to, in the traditional sense, attract you, if you're one of our Gig Now contractors, I want to attract you time and time again and figure out a way in which I can bring you into my culture. So, again, I don't think we're changing because of millennials. I think we're changing because of disruption, right? And it's being demanded upon us, and again, we're being innovative to answer the question.
I'm not a millennial, but I do like craft beer, though.
Yeah, of course.
But when you think about, I don't like to generalize on, you know, populations of the millennials or whatever. I think it's happening across the entire spectrum of the workforce. When you think about the fact that I'm a baby boomer, as you can tell, but baby boomers are leaving the workforce at large rates. There's a statistic out there, I don't know if it's still valid, but that we're going to lose 50% of the engineers in the next 5 years to retirement. So you think about, you know, the role that an engineer plays in an economy. and to lose 50% of them and you're not graduating enough of them to fill that gap, how are we going to do it? You're going to have to reach out to some of the people who are retiring and get them to come work as a gig and have them come back into the workforce and give them the flexibility that they need as they leave the workforce but maybe want to work more part-time. If you don't do that, you're simply not going to be able to get the talent to be able to do it. So it's not just the millennials. I think it's across the entire spectrum.
Well, it's millennials are the largest workforce right now. So,
yeah, yeah.
So and obviously there is a huge, there's a vast majority of untapped talent there. How do you go after it?
Well, again, I think, you know, as you go after that talent, what you have to do is you have to go out and you have to listen to them. How do they want to work? How do they want to interact with the company? How do you set your environment up? There used to be you would come in our offices and we all had to have closed offices and we loved that and the cubes. Now it's much more of a collaborative environment. If you want to bring in a younger workforce, you're going to have more open environments. They like to collaborate. They like to work together. You also have to enable it with technology. Your technology really has to be up to date. There's technology out there now that I don't even know how to use, but all of our workers do.
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to have them work from home, work from wherever they are.
George?
I mean, I think that we all could, you know, explain to you all the different things we do to brand our firms, right? Whether it's inclusion, whether it's flexibility, whether it's pay, there's a lot of different ways in which we would do that. I agree with George, though. It's really listening and then trying to stay ahead. And for us, we would tell you it's culture. So how do we attract people? It's always been the culture, right? When you come in and you work with EY, we hope that you're part of our family, and we want you to continue to be with EY. So, and again, we're making probably a little different than the other platforms. Most contractors come through the door traditionally in procurement. We've changed that agenda, and we've got our talent team, which some may call HR, we actually call them, they're our people talent team. Our talent team is leading our recruiting efforts, whether that's at colleges, whether it's experience hires, or whether it's gig now. And what we're trying to do is fit these contractors into our culture. We want to make sure when we land them that they're going to fit. Because if they fit, they're not only going to be more productive, but they're probably going to want to come back. So again, that reducing cost and cycle time, but also, again, being able to, again, expand on what we think makes us extremely special.
And what he just said is why you can find out that it's really not just about cost, because as the relationship changes from procurement going out and looking for these folks, but talent, the talent managers going out and finding them, now you know it's really about the talent.
So we're actually running low on time here, but I wanted to ask you both sort of a two-sided coin. Where do you see the workforce in the next 20 years? Do you see, are we going to have big corporate buildings still lingering, or is everybody basically going to be working on their own?
If I had a crystal ball and I knew what the workforce was going to be in the next 20 years, I wouldn't be sitting up here. But I do think as you look out to the future, we definitely know it's going to be a more technology-enabled workforce. We do know that flexibility is going to be maximally important. Do I think big buildings are going away? No, I don't think so. I think what they look like on the inside is going to change dramatically. And they're not going to be used, not again, 9 to 5. They're going to be used as areas where people come in to collaborate. But there is going to be a lot more people working from home. You're going to have to work with global teams rather than local teams. And so you're going to have to be very good culturally at working across a lot of different boundaries. But I wish I knew what the jobs of the future were going to be, because then you could really change a lot of things. So
then I would double down on my investment if George did have that crystal ball in Kelly Services. Yeah, I agree. I think if you go back 15 years ago, you know, globalization changed the way we all thought about work, right? It used to be, you know, we worked in Michigan, and then maybe we went to the Midwest, and then you expanded out to, you know, the Americas. Well, then Mexico, Canada, and China, and India. So globalization really changed how we work, and it really changed how we had to react to talent and the workforce. Hopefully that didn't unplug.
Good.
So I don't think that, and then you come to now with the technological advances, which, you know, if you look at whether it's Skype or allowing ourselves to have cloud computing, that's changed again the dynamics. And with George, I don't have a crystal ball. Do I think that large cities are going to go away? No. People have proven, and we know that if we look at millennials, Gen X, Gen Y, you name the generation, they want to congregate in like places. But we also know that work-life integration is going to become more and more important. And the ability to work when you want, how you want, is going to be vital. So I think we know that that's not going to change. I think we know largely concentrations of where they'll be. What we don't know is how technology will change. I don't know the next Uber that will allow a large percentage of our people that work during the day to go into the gig economy at night. That's the hard part to predict. But again, I think that both of our companies work very, very diligently to stay in front of that technology, to stay in front of those trends, and to test them out, right?
There's another fact. And again, I don't know if it's still valid, but if you have a five-year-old today, they're likely going to be, 70% of them are likely going to be working in jobs that don't exist today.
That's amazing.
We'll leave you with another fun fact. Between 2015 and 2020, I don't know how many of you know this, but 60% of your core business skills will change. So if you think about what you started with in 2015, and for those students in the back who are about to graduate, the things in which you graduate with 5 years later will be obsolete, or 50%+ of those skills will be obsolete. So the need to be able to adapt and change is more vital than ever.
So the workforce is changing. Is the work ethic changing?
I don't think so. I mean, George, I
don't see it either.
Yeah, I think people have a perception, and we try not to generalize, but the people that they work differently. Is the work ethic different? No. Were we expected, because of the technology maybe in play at the time, that I had to punch a card at 8 and punch a card at 5? Yes. In that case, I worked 8 hours. I know a lot of people that folks may question that work 18 hours a day. So they just have a different way of doing it, and I think we've got to be inclusive enough to accept that.
People come to work to succeed, and I've not seen that change in almost 40 years I've been doing this.
So for all these future CEOs that are here in the audience, what would your advice be to them? Or that want to be for future CEOs?
Be flexible, challenge yourself, make sure that you go, what I would say is don't stay in your comfort zone. Every day come in and try to challenge your comfort zone, try to learn something new, continuously learn.
Yeah, I would say, you know, take risks, go out on the edge, and make sure that you like to learn, because I think it's incredibly important to continue your education. It doesn't stop when you graduate high school, college, or your graduate degree. You know, always be, I'm not a big book reader, but I love magazines, I love articles, I love websites, so I'm continuously on them, trying to look for trends and trying to stay ahead of the curve. So in addition to George, I think, yeah, be a learner for life. I think it's increasingly important.
And since it's all about talent, get yourself a group like that. Surround yourself with people who really know how to do those things that make you look good.
George Langhelm, EY, George Corona from Kelly Services. Thank you both.
Thank you. Thank you, Jackie. Appreciate it.
So, are you ready?
All right.
Okay, one question that I really wanted to ask before I started with all these questions. You never mentioned, you're talking about skills. Nobody ever mentioned loyalty, energy, enthusiasm, kindness, listening skills, working as a team. How did these come in when you're a gig economy and when you have a gig workforce?
Well, I think just because you're, I think the almost the misnomer is that if you're working as a gig worker, you're different than a full-time worker, and you're not. What you have to deliver is the same. And so all of those skills of having loyalty, respect, building trust, all of those things, whether you're a full-time employee or you're a gig employee, stay the same. And when you look for a gig employee that you bring in, you look for all those same attributes.
Hey, Fleury and I couldn't agree more. I mean, when we talked about why we moved that process into our talent team, it's for that exact reason. When we want someone to come in through our GigNow platform, we want them to look and feel like our employees. We want them to understand our culture, how we serve the community, what's important to our clients, you know, how to manage risk. So all of those things that we, you would treat what we would consider a traditional, we look for those same things in our contractors and our contingent labor.
Okay, Mr. Leno, what are some of the qualities that Ernst & Young looks for when we just actually talked about it, but yeah, when selecting executives?
All of the above. the one of the things the students asked a great question, and the one thing that I would tell you is the ability to team. We hire really smart people every single day. But one thing that I think sets people out from another is the ability to team. I talk about inclusion. You know, we have diverse workforces, and you can define diversity however you want. But you have to be able to listen. You have to be able to accept. You have to be able to team with individuals. And I would say the folks that we look at, you know, take sans the classes and the GPA and the certifications flooring, it's really that ability. That's what sets people out in us. So if you're interviewing with EY and you want to know what sets you apart, you know, actually expand how you've teamed with people, how you've accepted other cultures. What have you done to reach out? I think those are increasingly important. And the last thing I would say is, you know, to us, we believe in giving back to the community and giving back to where we live and work. And it's another thing that's important to us. So EY, it's very specific. When you come in, we want to know, do you share that same passion?
Okay, and how do you see technology or a digital talent marketplace changing your revenue model?
Well, you know, when you think about the traditional revenue model, which is, especially for a company like Kelly, which is basically a markup over the pay rate, basically to put a transaction out there. You need a person, we find the person, and we do a transaction. Those things are going away. With the gig platforms, more and more of the work is going to outcome-based. And so the revenue models are going to be less transaction-based in the future, and they're going to be about what you produce and what outcomes you can produce for companies. And more, that's what they're looking for. They're looking for, what are you good at, what can you do for us, and how can we pay you for the outcome? And the good news with that is, if you provide a good outcome, they'll even pay you more than the transaction.
This is a student question, but I had a lot of people writing in and wanting to know the answer to this. What is your opinion on the $15 minimum wage?
What is my opinion of the $15 minimum wage?
It's more political.
That's a tough question.
I know it is.
That is a very tough question. I'm more of a market-based person, so I believe that the market will set the wage rates. Because whenever you try to go against the market, something else will happen. And so what you don't want to do is you don't want to artificially set a market for prices that forces work to go offshore or forces technology to come in. What you want to do is take a look at paying for the productivity. And I think as we get to higher and higher levels of productivity, that's actually what in an optimistic sense, as I look at what technology is doing for us now in robotic process automation, it's going to allow people to elevate themselves into higher level kinds of things that they're doing, and their pay is going to go up because we're going to give them different work, and we're going to let the robots do the things that are at a lower rate. But I'm more of a market capitalist from that perspective.
George, in your clients, many of them are probably small business owners. How is that going to influence them when it's $15 minimum wage?
This George or this George?
That George.
All right.
You get the hard one this time.
Well, most of my clients, Florian, I would tell you, are probably not small businesses. I mean, we're dealing with some of the larger companies around the globe. But all of them would be affected by it. And I think that there is, similar to tax reform, right, there's going to be pluses and there's going to be minuses that they'll have to deal with. I think our job is to help those companies better understand that. I agree with George. I think we live in a capitalistic economy. I think you have to be very, very careful about how you artificially start moving levers. So it will affect them. Some will be positive. They may have, you know, if you think back to the great Henry Ford, remember, he set a living wage.
He did.
And that's how he changed and created the middle class. So are there positives that can come out of that? Most certainly. But there's also, I'm sure, negatives too that you have to deal with. And I think that the economy is complex. There's a lot of really smart people that deal with it every day. If it occurs, our job is to help companies deal with it.
Can I add something to that as
well? Sure.
I would also caution that what you hear in the media, because the media is so polarized and so politicized these days, when you read about a topic like that, like the 15-hour minimum wage, when you read about it from multiple different sites, media outlets, so that you are more informed, that you listen to what CEOs are saying about that, rather than just what you're hearing in reports of the news media. For someone who's worked in 25 years in the news media, you need to know that that story changes from where it originates to what you're seeing on the air. And it is highly politicized now, and very often I find that if you read as much about a subject as possible, then you will become truly informed.
How do you see technology or a digital talent marketplace changing your revenue model?
Oh, I think we answered that question.
Hey, I'll give you my side.
All right.
So on our, you know, how do we generate more revenue? Either we raise our rates, which I'm sure none of you would like to hear that.
No.
Or we come up with creative solutions, right? And the way in which we grow as a firm is we have to be in front of and we have to innovate and create solutions. So what does the gig economy for us? It allows us to incubate and create those solutions much quicker, Florian. And I think that's one of the important, you know, when everybody focuses on a cost, but when you do look at the flip side of that from a revenue model, for us, it allows us to challenge ourselves, to get there quicker into the marketplace, and really deliver innovative solutions to our clients faster. And to us, that's how we grow. So the technology of tomorrow, we're hoping that we deliver that faster than somebody else. It's hard to do that hiring out of college or hiring experience. It's much easier by being able to get a contingent worker next week to help us, similar to George when they were challenging internal at Kelly.
You know, George, I was very intrigued when one of the students asked you about some of the work you're doing with student teachers, and you told me this was such a growing business for you. Where do you get them? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it's our Kelly Educational Staffing business, and again, it's one of the things that we're most proud of, because we were able to do, when we think about giving back to the communities, substitute teaching was a big gap in the economy and a big gap in our country. You know, again, some of these statistics that you hear, that we're a child from kindergarten through 12th grade spends 1 year of their time as a substitute teacher. And about, in general, across all of the school districts, about 70%, only 70% of the classrooms are filled on a given day when there's an absence. So this product allowed us to go into the marketplace and fulfill a noble purpose, which was to improve education and improve the experience for children, but allowed us to also develop a great business from that. And then when you layer on top of that, that we brought our expertise in recruiting to going out and finding the very best teachers that are available to fill those classrooms, it's an entire virtuous circle, because what we also did was we improved the credentials of the people that are in front of the children. So it was just a great, everything came together in that product.
You know, I'd comment on that. It was actually brought to my attention with Florian upstairs when one of the great students in the crowd today brought that to our attention. But, you know, it's revenue for Kelly Services, but I think George and his team should be commended. It's really looking at it not as a way in which they were generating revenue. It's really filling a void. And I think for any of us out there who have looked at what's happened in Detroit public schools or our own communities, you know, not having the right teachers with the right skill sets is becoming an increasing problem. And the ability to have a company like that look at the problem, take it head on, and really provide that solution should be commended. So I appreciate it.
Of course, my question to George was, are you doing this in the Detroit school system? Because we certainly need well-trained teachers, and I'm not going to give your answer, but you can give your answer.
Well, you know, what I would say is that every, you know, there's lots of different aspects to whether a school district will use a company like Kelly or not. We just, you know, we haven't done it in Detroit yet. I will tell you, we're doing it in Philadelphia Public Schools and having a really great result with them.
Okay, so how do you see technology or a digital talent marketplace changing your revenue?
I think
we got that.
We got that.
Okay. And what technologies are your companies implementing to support this gig economy?
Well, you know, there is no lack of technology platforms out there. I think last year alone, over $1 billion in venture capital money went into human resource platforms to create these connections. And so, you know, I could go through the whole plethora of technology solutions that we're using, but basically when we're looking at it, the new up-and-coming areas right now are things that allow you to interview at a distance, so things like Skype and chatbot and those kinds of technologies. But more importantly, some of the online marketplaces that allow companies to come out and place their demands, or what the demand is in the marketplace, and for employees, potential employees or potential gig employees out there, to be able to connect themselves with the skills that they have with this kind of work.
You know, most company employees can define what success is in their job. So what does success look like for a gig employee?
I don't think it's different than success for a regular employee. You know, they are an owner of their business, and they define a skill, and they define how they want to grow that skill and grow that business. And I think they probably, their definition could be a little bit more on the flexibility floor, and I think that's a little bit hard to answer, but, you know, they're providing themselves with flexibility, they're providing themselves with a good revenue stream, and quite frankly, they're also getting a great amount of skills. I mean, one of the things that we didn't highlight is that person that sits in the gig economy, they don't have to repeat the same project with the same skills every time. In fact, we would encourage, and I'm sure a lot of you have heard of the digital badges, right? So it's one of the ways in which we would encourage our contingent workforce to come back is we give you badges. It's a bronze, a silver, a gold, and a platinum badge. It's hosted by a company named Acclaim. They do Microsoft, IBM, and other very big companies that I'm sure are here with us today. But it is this way in which we give them I call it a digital resume. We provide them with the same opportunities that our normal employees would work on these projects. We bring them in as part of our culture. So I don't think it's that different. I think that the main thing that if I were to join the gig economy would just be freedom. Right? I may define it as a little bit more freedom for myself.
You know, I think you know, one of the changes that I've seen over the years is that, again, going back to baby boomers, we sought full-time positions for life. So it was stability that we were after and that we tried to get. When you see the workers of today, they're not after as much stability. They're after the skills that they're going to be able to develop that are going to help them to be more marketable for their future, and the flexibility to have a work-life balance that meets their needs. And so that's really the big change. But when you think about them doing work for you, as George said, they're their own company. And so they are going to be highly accountable to the results that they deliver for you, because they know that the next gig that they will get will be based on the fact of how well they did in this one.
Sure.
And so I really think that you don't see a drop-off in productivity when you do that.
George, your company has a retirement age of 62, is that so?
It's, wow, she's good at research. It's actually a little bit less than that, 60.
Well, because I'm wondering if then you take these same people that have been so loyal and good and all the rest and who are 60 and they're in the spring of their life, do you hire them back as gig employees?
By all means. I mean, I think that, you know, Jackie, you asked a question earlier that, you know, is this something that millennials are driving? And the answer is no. I mean, they're people. I mean, it may be for different reasons, right? If you're 22, you may join the gig economy because you want freedom, you want to travel, you want to see and have different experiences with different companies. If you're 60, you may have a great nest egg. You may love what you do. You may have a mandatory retirement age. You may not. You may not want to just follow your passion, or you may want to give back, and that's part of the gig economy. So do we see that? By all means. I mean, for us, it's always a challenge. I mean, when that knowledge walks out the door, for whatever reason, whether it's retirement or going to work for another company, it's a big challenge. To be able to keep that somehow in the EY universe and family is increasingly important.
Well, if I went to the EY, there were 3 months left.
No, it's good.
We bring you back, George. We bring you back.
Okay. So let's have a little bit of fun. I know you wouldn't want to have lunch with me because you'd be so worried about what you're eating and what I'm watching, right? But who would you like to have lunch with?
Who would I like to have lunch with?
Anybody, living or dead.
Abraham Lincoln.
Why?
Took on a very difficult, maybe the most difficult subject at a time of civil unrest, and brought unity to our country. And quite frankly, I think we could all learn a little bit from that and use it today.
George?
Well, I would probably say Steve Jobs.
Steve Jobs, interesting. Why?
Because he was so innovative, and he was such a big thinker. And I just think you could learn so much from a lunch with him about how, what was his thought process? How did he think about these things? And when you think about what he did a lot of good for society too.
That's right.
With the vision that he had.
He brought us the iPhone. I mean,
okay, so what advice to your 25-year-old self? Now, you're back. You're both 25.
Yeah.
But you know what you know now. What would you give yourself? What advice?
For me, I think it would be some of the things that I've learned. One, the biggest thing would be something that we talk about at our company every day, which is in anything you do, do the right thing. And it's not always the easiest thing to do, but if you do the right thing, you always get to the right result. The second thing I would say would be, if you're going to do something, do it to the best of your ability. I tell myself, don't go out and try and do something, and then if something went wrong, I sat back and said, gee, I wish I would have done more. Do everything that you possibly do, and then finally just treat everybody the way you want to be treated. And if you can do those three things, to me, that's the advice I would give my 25-year-old self.
George?
I would say don't be in a rush. I think a lot of us, especially me when I was 25, I was trying to rush through my career, and I was trying to go to a finish line that really doesn't exist. And I think, smell the roses a little bit more, take your time, enjoy life, enjoy your family. The second thing I would say is take risks. I think too often that, people provide you with opportunities, you view that as a risk. Try to turn that around and look at it as a true opportunity and actually take that leap of faith. And lastly, I told the students earlier, you were given 2 ears and 1 mouth for a reason. Listen, because you would be surprised at the knowledge that will be expounded upon you and what you can learn. So take the time to do that.
Ladies and gentlemen, George, and Jack.
That was a great answer.
Great answer. George and George, thanks for your insights on the gig economy. Jackie Page, you rocked it. Listen to Jackie News Radio 95 while you're driving around midday. Florian Mark, we're so pleased you're a DEC board member and that you took time to be presiding officer. Thank you. You guys do a great job. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being with us. This meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.